All right, so good morning, everyone. So yes, I'll be talking about information loss in quantum field theory, which is a subject I've enjoyed discussion with John Preskill over the last decade, I would say. So there will be two parts in this talk. And the first part is a collaboration with John, and the last part is more recent results. All right, so we heard on Tuesday from Steve Gitting, like, why we should be interested in information loss in black holes. So I won't go through the same details, just make a short recap. So there's nothing that can escape, in principle, the interior of a black hole event horizon, but there are semi-classical calculations which predict that the black hole evaporates through radiation. And this raises the question whether this process is unitary. If you think the process of black hole evaporation is unitary, then it means that somehow information that got into the black hole escapes during the process of evaporation. So to account for this, you need to modify space-time geometry, and you need to protect unitarity somehow. And this is, we've heard a lot about this week, like the ADS-CFT correspondence is one way. So you have to make bold assumption to salvage unitarity. If you think that the answer is no, this process is not unitary, well, this contradicts or breaks quantum mechanics as we know it. And also, it begs the question, like, if black hole evaporation is not unitary, how come we don't see non-unitary processes, you know, in everyday experiment? How do you prevent these non-unitary processes that occur in black hole from trickling down into everyday quantum mechanics? So we've heard a lot of talks this week about efforts to salvage unitarity of quantum mechanics. And I'm going to go the other way around. So I just think that as we have to make bolder and bolder assumption to save unitarity, it's probably well advised to go back and say, you know, what kind of crazy assumptions do we need to make in order to get non-unitary quantum mechanics? Also, I believe that it's important that you come up with models of non-unitary quantum mechanics so they can be tested and maybe falsified. So this is not, you know, of course, there's a long history of people attempting to do this, and this is by just only a very small sample of all the models, and there are also no-go theorems, so our arguments explaining why non-unitarity is dangerous in quantum mechanics. So there are a lot of experts in this room, so I will not go through those. And there are also collapse models to explain, like, the measurement process in quantum mechanics, which is also related, and these things have been widely studied. So the setting that I will adopt in this talk is just a Lindblad equation, which is what we use in open quantum system to describe the evolution of a Markovian but non-unitary quantum evolution. So here it's just the same thing, except that now you have your Hamiltonian and your Lindbladian act on a field. So you have a Hamiltonian density and then Lindblad density, but otherwise it's the same mathematical setting. So this is an equation for the evolution of the density matrix of the system. And it has this form because that guarantees that a positive trace one operator will evolve into a positive trace one operator, so the wave function preserves its interpretation. Okay, so let me just summarize the kind of argument I won't summarize the argument, just the conclusion of this paper, for instance, by Banks, Peskin, and Suskin, but other people have reached the same conclusion. Local Lorentz covariant Lindblad field theory cannot preserve energy, and this is like a very mild way of saying what they said. In fact, it's like in a Planckian time, you get hit by a Planckian amount of energy. So it's this, but in a very drastic way. So I'd like to maybe go a little bit further than this. I'd like to say that energy is not even defined in these systems. Why? Well, the energy is associated to a Hamiltonian, and the Hamiltonian is the generator of time translation. Here it is not. It's a Lindbladian. So you might say, but the Lindbladian has a unitary part and a non-unitary part, so the energy is just the unitary component. But it turns out that this is not well-defined mathematically, because you can have a Lindblad equation, and you can take things from the non-unitary part and and put them in the unitary part. Yes?
Just a clarification. I mean, here the Lambdaian is not because of decoherence. It's fundamental.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. It's fundamental. Yeah, so so there's no unique, like, unitary part to a non-unitary evolution. So you can't split and say, this is the Hamiltonian, this is the thing I want to be conserved. But despite these mathematical complications, you know, it is a fact that in everyday experiment, we see a stable vacuum, we see that energy is conserved, and so on. So in some way, the unitary must admit this under special circumstances, okay? What about locality? Well, so we want local field equations, and usually in unitary quantum field theory, locality is used to enforce causality. So if you have non-local interaction in a quantum field theory, it will not be causal. But this happens not to be true for non-unitary processes. So you can have non-local interactions that are nonetheless causal. And my favorite example of this is extremely simple. Just take two qubits that are, you know, light years apart, but somehow they relax into a singlet state. Okay? You can write down a master equation for this, and clearly this creates entanglement on a very long scale, but you cannot use this Lambdaian to signal. Okay? So it's not because you have non-local interaction that you have non-causality in non-unitary quantum field theory, and similar and fancier arguments were given before. So the goal here will be to construct a well-defined non-unitary quantum field theory that does not conflict with experiments. So I must warn you that I do not mind breaking theoretical construct that build on the premise that quantum mechanics is unitary. Okay, so if you object to me and say, well, you know, you're breaking Noether's theorem, yes, I am, because that's just a corollary to unitary evolution, and similarly for cluster decomposition, and probably many other of your objections. on the other hand, I do mind breaking these well-established relation, you know, in ordinary circumstances, like at low energy and or on flat space. Okay, so that will be kind of my guiding principle. I want things to look as they look in everyday experiments. So like, you know, something to keep in mind is maybe a theory in which the non-unitary terms are irrelevant in the infrared under an RG flow. That's kind of the guiding principle. And fault-tolerant quantum computation, which is what I usually do for a living, provides an example of how, in principle, we can recover unitary evolution despite non-unitary underlying dynamics. Frank. Correct.
What is the function there?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, I mean, there are subtle differences, particularly at short time scales. Here I'm taking this as a fundamental theory. So you can always say, like, oh, if I have a non-unitary process, it's because there's a, you know, a new neutrino that's we don't really see very often, but it's just there and it's taking away information. Here I'm assuming that this is fundamental. And there are subtle differences between a Lindblad is always an approximation when you have another field. Here I'm supposing that it's the exact evolution. Okay. So I just want to start with a very simple model. So let's see. So of course we want Lorentz covariant in flat space. So how is this achieved in ordinary field theory? Well, the operator that's responsible for the time evolution is the zeroth component of a four vector, the energy momentum vector. And therefore, if you pick like a time-like vector and you define an evolution, like the evolution superoperator, we call it CPTP map, completely positive trace preserving map, this way, which is just, you know, ordinary time evolution, and then you boost to another frame, you can say that the evolution in this other frame is the same as if you had changed frame before the evolution, but just boosted your vector. Okay, so that's Lorentz covariance, and it's guaranteed if your generator of time evolution is the zeroth component of a four vector. So what we need is a Lindblad operator that is the zeroth component of a four vector of super operators, and this will give us Lorentz covariant evolution. So, okay, I have to give a warning. Here, there's something a little bit tricky, which is that I'm assuming that space-like displacements are given by this Lindblad evolution, but time-like evolution are unitary as they are in quantum field theory. And this is fine because these things don't mix under Lorentz transformation, but it does mean that the Poincaré transformation no longer form a group because you could have two time-like translations that add up to a space-like, two space-like translations that add up to a time-like translation, but these don't need to be equal, okay? So this is a conceptual, it's a bit of a puzzle. Okay, so let's start with something very simple, a free scalar field theory. So this is the Hamiltonian. So now I'm going to consider, say, the positive frequency component of the field operator pi, so this is just the conjugate momentum operator, if you wish, and I'm going to use those as jump operators. So here's your evolution for the density matrix. This is your usual unitary evolution, and I just have this Lindblad term. It's just the regular Lindblad form, but I've specialized to this operator. Now this becomes much more familiar if you just go to if you perform a Fourier transform and you write it in a momentum space. So what you get is just a collection of damped harmonic oscillators. Okay, so here's your Hamiltonian for your harmonic oscillator. Here's the damping term. The frequency is sitting in front here. And you can easily check just by virtue of the way that the annihilation operator transforms that this is Lorentz covariant as defined on the first few slides. Okay? okay, so let's consider energy conservation. Let's just look at consequences of this very, very simple model. The BBS argument was that the vacuum is unstable and on a very short time scale you get fried by very high energy. But this is not true here. We have a stable vacuum. In fact, you might say it's too stable because it's not only stable, it's the fixed point. So everything eventually goes to the vacuum. It's not surprising, it's a damped system. I should say that almost all previous models, the ones that I looked at, considered Hermitian jump operators. So the Lindblad operators were Hermitian, and this will always give you a CPTP map that is unital. Unital means that the fixed point is the maximally mixed state. So it's not surprising that if you have a unital CPTP map, that you instantaneously or very rapidly go to the maximally mixed state, because by construction this is unavoidable. So you need to consider non-Hermitian jump operators. The other thing, if you consider mode P, its decay rate is gamma omega P. One way to think about this is that all the modes have a constant quality factor. You can imagine that this quality factor is very high. So, by setting gamma to an extremely small value, and then just by tuning this gamma, you could imagine that in everyday experience, we would not see decoherence on any relevant time scale, but at like Planckian energy or just very high energy or on a large scale, these non-unitary effects would become relevant. So here, just by construction, the theory is almost unitary at low energy. Okay, what about locality and causality? Well, despite the appearance, this is not a local operator because I've taken only the positive frequency component of that operator. So if you compute the commutator, you see that even when x is different from y, you get an exponential decay controlled by the mass. Okay, so if you look at the propagator, the propagator will bleed a little bit outside the light cone, but it's controlled by a mass scale, so it's only an exponential amount of non-causality. So in this model, causality is violated on a microscopic length scale controlled by a mass. Okay, so of course this is a motivation to consider heavy fields. So we will assume that this only occurs, this dissipator is only turned on heavy fields, maybe Planckian fields. And energy loss would be very mild on other species or other sectors of the theory. So if you imagine that you have your standard model stuff here, which it just undergoes unitary evolution, and then you have this heavy damped particle, and some hybridization coupling the two fields, well, of course, this guy would almost always be in the vacuum, and this guy doesn't have enough energy to excite it. So the effect of the non-unitary processes are very, very mild until the energy of this ordinary sector becomes extremely high. Okay, so this would be a way to shield the non-unitary processes away from the low energy sector. It also brings up the question, to which I don't have an answer, perhaps some of you do: what is the shortest scale on which causality has been tested? Okay, so this maybe this type of theory can be falsified very rapidly. I don't know. Okay, so the other big question in this sort of theory is that our interactions. So what if we had like a phi to the four term? So this is something we spent a number of years trying to understand, John and I, and it was shown this year you can renormalize these theories, okay? It happens that the formalism presented in this paper does not quite fit our model. Our action is a little bit weird here, but here's an heuristic argument. I hope it will convince you. As imagine that you adiabatically turn on this interaction, so the ground state changes, so you will slowly dress the ground state, and if simultaneously you dress the annihilation operator in the damping to preserve the ground state, then you should have a stable vacuum, okay? And this is an exercise that we've done. You can do this in perturbation theory term by term, so you correct to first order your ground state, and you correct your annihilation operator in such a way that the dressed ground state is annihilated by the dressed annihilation operator. And this is a way, at least in perturbation theory, to preserve a stable vacuum. Okay, but I think that a rigorous proof of this remains an important open question. So in theory, we have all the ingredients to look for non-unitary processes that are irrelevant in the infrared. So maybe, you know, just in principle, if you have jump operators with a large mass dimension, they should be irrelevant. And that might be a way of getting unitarity in low energy despite non-unitary processes at high energies. Okay, so well formulated mathematically and agree with experiments that have been performed.